Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAAR Football Show brought to you by AIB. We're in our brand new studios here in Fumbly Lane, lads. This is a big day for the GAAR. We've come home.
It's looking great as well. A lot of space here as well, a bit uneasy.
Needs a little bit of work, a little bit of a personal touch before we go Facebook Live, which hopefully will happen in the future. But listen, we're happy with what we have. First off, want to talk about today. Big news breaking this morning is Desi Farrell stood down as GPA chairman. This came as a huge shock to me. I was talking to a couple of people this morning and they said this wasn't a shock at all. But I was surprised to hear the news. Like, he just negotiated a new deal for the GPA, which got a lot of, you know, good reviews. Maybe he thought he brought it as far as he could. You know, he's managed the Dublin minors and under 21s to All Ireland glory. Maybe Jim Gavin stepping down. Who knows? It's hard to know what to read into it.
But do you think he would be next in line to take the Dublin job?
Would. I'd say he would, right? If Jim Gavin stood down, who's next? Who else? He served his time. He's won All Ireland's at minor and under 21.
So should we change this to Jim Gavin stepping down?
I think that actually gets overlooked because when I think of Desi, I think GPA. I don't think of anything else. You don't think of an up-and-coming coach, which is what he is as well, you know?
Yeah. There was nothing in the statement to say what he was doing next. It was just, I've enjoyed my time and...
That's it.
Was that sort of it? Like, and everyone thanked him and there was no sort of indication of why or what he was doing next.
No, I don't think anybody really knows. We've Paul Galvin here with us as well. Paul, what are you, a GPA advocate?
I am. I kind of, it took him a while, I think, to get warmed up and to get stuck in, I think, to getting improving issues for players and delivering upon kind of promises and that. But he certainly did that, and Desi, I think, has done really well, and the people, big team with him, of course, have done really well. So I think he deserves a lot of credit and congratulations, and I'd say no doubt he's probably clearing the way maybe for his next move, be it to a new sporting organisation. Maybe you don't know, the FAI or the Olympic Council of Ireland maybe, or something.
There's
like
definitely
that.
A space on the Olympic Council
some,
of Ireland.
There could be some moves in that regard, but I'd imagine that Desi maybe might have his eye on the inter-county scene in management terms now at this stage. So interesting times and exciting for him, and good luck to him, because I think he worked exceptionally hard at establishing the GPA, and I think he's a clever strategist, so no doubt he has his eye on something anyway.
Yeah, are you a member of it?
I am.
Right. I actually stopped my membership last year because I got the hump about championship restructures. I thought they were doing
like, this.
I just got annoyed that they weren't moving fast enough on this, and I'm not giving them any more €50. So I pulled the plug on the direct debit. But, you know, it is true. Like, they have done some great work. I think when they started getting funded from the GPA, maybe they were a little bit compromised. But it is sad to see Desi go. I think Desi is a genuine good guy, you know.
Desi's
and I think a lot of people... A lot of players would agree with that. I don't think there's anything. I think what you see is what you get with Desi. Although, you know, why he's stepping down still feels a little bit strange to me. Like, I mean, when you've signed this really good deal from GPA, you've got a percentage of commercial income, which, you know, wasn't there for a long time. It just seems to me like a strange time to go. You know, it's almost like, is there anything behind this? But look, I'm just a cynical sort of person anyways.
No, oh, you're not.
Some good hands. Some good hands.
Here, I'm going from one Desi to another Desi, lads. And poor Desi Dolan is in an awful conundrum. Have you heard this one? He has a club game with his club, Gary Castle, on Saturday at 2:30. But he also has is a member of the Sunday game panel, and that starts at 5:00. So the Gary Castle chairman is on record for saying it looks like we're not going to have Desi Dolan for the club championship match at 2:30 because he has to go to do the Sunday game. How the hell does the Sunday game tramp it's a senior championship quarter final? Seems like a bizarre one, unless they're just trying to bluff the Westmeath County Board to change the game, just, you know, to make it easier on him.
Why did they have the championship match on the same day as the All-Ireland final anyway? I know it's a replay, but geez, like the All-Ireland final day should be freed up so you can watch it and you can enjoy it.
Ah, yeah, but the match is at 2:30, so you would be able, you would have time to play the game, get into a pub or go home and watch it. So, you know, I'd say they moved the time. I'd say it was fixed for 5 or 7 or whatever, and they moved the time. But how is this even, how the chairman is quoted saying, as things stand, the likelihood is that Desi won't be available for our game. What's happened here?
It's a strange one. Like, it's tough in a way. You can see, like, Desi's 37, and you can see he's thinking about his career now, sort of long term.
Yeah, but his career as a teacher.
Maybe he doesn't want to be a teacher.
This is just a mixer.
Like, but it's still championship. Like, I went home last weekend and I watched our club playing the intermediate semi-final. And it was brilliant they won, but it was bloody heartbreaking as well. Like, you know, just sitting back and watching it and having no part in it. And I'd like to think if you were in a situation where, maybe I'm a bit of a hypocrite then, because I've come down to Dublin now and I'm not representing that club anymore. But if you were sort of playing with them all year and you had played the first championship quarter final, like, you'd like to think that, Jesus, nothing would come in the way.
I want to bring this up, because but it's a non-story. He'd be playing with Gary Castle, you'd imagine.
I'd agree with you.
But why is the chairman coming out saying it looks like we're going to lose, we're not going to play with we're going to have to play without Desi? Sounds like a strange one. You don't do the Sunday game over a championship quarter final. Absolutely not.
Well, I'm probably trying to put a bit of heat on the board.
We'll move on from that.
Finally, just the other side of it, it's not like they were getting a lot of plaudits in the Sunday game anyway. Like, maybe you can afford to, yeah, they miss it for one
and
night.
Plus, the Sunday game show at 5:00 is for Spillane, Brawley, and O'Rourke. Desi's like one of the B team members who,
well, they'd have to be in watching it, I suppose, and sort of highlighting where
that's true.
What
for
they
some,
want to talk
for,
about.
Well, Desi doesn't exactly point out some breaking, what's the word I'm looking for? Cutting edge analysis. Yeah, there you go. Right, we'll get down to this more serious talk now, because there's been a lot of talk during the week about this campaign, this smear campaign by ex-Dublin players in the media, and they're trying to paint a picture of Lee Keegan that might not necessarily be fair. You know, I think Kieran Whelan last week started off in the Sunday game by saying, you know, the instigator of these incidents should be the one that gets punished and not the person who retaliates. And I'd 100% agree with that. But the actual clip he showed on the Sunday game was Lee Keegan just giving Connolly a push, a harmless push, and then Connolly grabbed his jersey and then a wrestling match ensued. So who was the instigator really there? It looked like Connolly to me for the wrestling match. There's other clips of Connolly stopping Keegan. My theory on this is there's 100% two of them in it. There's absolutely not an instigator and a victim here like it's trying to be portrayed. You know, Keegan attacks as well and Connolly tries to stop him attacking. Mm. Keegan's outscored Connolly. So to try to paint the picture of Keegan is just this spoiler that does nothing, only pull and drag out of Connolly, you know, I think it's unfair.
Yeah, I mean, what was on TV the last day, I didn't think there was a whole lot shown on TV the last day that was particularly bad. Now, whether at the game, maybe it was a lot more off the ball stuff happening, but on television there didn't appear to be a whole lot happening.
No.
Between the two of them, so look, you know what I mean, I suppose both sides now are trying to maybe gain an advantage and put a bit of heat on the referee the next day, because you know, you saw Conor Lane, I thought, in the game was he was very, very quick to get involved, I thought.
Yeah.
Very quick to get involved, very quick to make decisions, and you know, you don't know how guys will react, how referees will react to being on TV and to being in finals and that, and you know, maybe the Dublin boys feel that Maurice Deegan is someone they can lean on and that he's someone who's likely to make a call that could go their way on the day. So I think it's more to do with the referee, obviously, than Lee Keegan or Connolly as such. Like,
yeah,
trying to maybe hope that they'll get a break or a decision on the day.
So you think referees that, you know, when they referee a National League game, for example, would referee a game a little bit different than they might when the cameras are on them in Croke Park?
I think that can happen, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you experience of this happening?
You see, what I saw the referees over the years, like, you know, the certain referees do like to get a hold of the Connollys and the Keegans and do like to get involved in that kind of thing and like, yeah, to be seen to be making calls, and you know, they're in front of a big crowd and in front of the camera, and I think you do get discrepancies in performances. Listen, no more than a player. Like, does a player approach an Ireland final in a certain way compared to maybe a league game?
Yeah,
I tend to approach them all the same way, but I think you do, you know, a player when he's on telly and a player when he's in front of a big crowd, it does something to some people, and I think it can do something to referees as well, and they tend to get a bit more involved in the. Some of them tend to.
Yeah, I'm the man. Involved. Yeah, I never really thought about it with referees because 100% it happens with some players. Dara O'Shea actually spoke about that a couple of weeks ago, but. With referees, you don't really think of it. I suppose they have egos too, and look, I'm the man, I'm putting my foot down here.
Yeah, that's the most annoying thing. It's like, not only is it sort of trying to suggest that Keegan isn't doing a brilliant job, which he is, like, you know, they're sort of degrading what he's been doing, just then pulling and dragging, he's getting away with what he shouldn't be, all these ex-Dubliners, like, but then the most annoying thing is that it can impact the referee. I mean, if whatever happens during the game on Saturday, they're both on the ground, or Keegan fouls him, like, the referee, even subconsciously, he might not go out of his way to do it, but Morris Deegan might run over and think, this is my chance to say, listen, all the millions of people watching, I'm aware of what's going on here, and I'm going to deal with it, and he just go over and give a yellow card for something that could not be a yellow card.
Yeah, but I think if it was anybody else outside of Connolly has history with this as well. Like, he got a yellow card against Dolan with Westmeath when Dolan just came back out, patted him on the head, and Connolly wrestled him to the ground. Connolly's into this kind of thing, and he's a clever player. It benefits Connolly more than it does Keegan to wrestle to the ground and get yellow cards. Then Keegan is under pressure, you know, so I think Connolly knows this. And that's why when they get into clinches or when Keegan grabs him, Connolly will make the most of it, grab Keegan, go to ground, hoping that they're both given yellow cards. And suddenly then Keegan is in under all sorts of pressure.
Not sure I agree with you there, no. But
it does benefit Connolly more than Keegan to have both of them on yellows.
I don't think it's any benefit to Connolly to be on a yellow, like, you know what I mean? The game he plays and that side, I don't think that helps his cause at all. And I'll tell you what, he's a tackler too, Connolly. Connolly is a worker.
Yep.
Connolly gets stuck in. He'll chase a guy, he'll tackle, he's aggressive when he tackles. So if I was Connolly now, I'd be trying to stay away from yellows, you know what I mean? I wouldn't be trying to drag my man into getting a yellow card because it's most likely, listen, highly likely that both of them will get the yellow card anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think it's a banker. Well, I think the fact that they're both wing forwards, wing backs then, this point, that Keegan has outscored Connolly. He's as much of a scoring threat, he's proven when he marks Connolly, as Connolly is. So why is it the picture being painted that Keegan is the fella that's responsible for all of this? Do you know? And it is from ex-Dublin players that are painting the picture. I mean, it's been Clark has been on about it, Ger Brennan's been on about it, Alan Brogan mentioned it as well, and Kieran Whelan brought it up in the Sunday game, and that's in front of a million viewers. Like, I mean, why, when Keegan is so good in an attacking sense, is the picture being painted that it's all one-way traffic?
Well, I think it's just a bit of an agenda where they're trying to get Connolly a bit more freedom. Like, you know,
agenda? Because this is an accusation that this is an orchestrated agenda.
I don't think it's orchestrated, but I think when you see one person saying it, and then maybe it is just their own belief, but when you put them all together, it comes across as a campaign. It's probably not a military operation, but it's...
Paul Clark is an ex-teammate of Jim Gavin, so I'm trying to read maybe too much into
but
this.
But I'd say it's just a Dubs opinion. Probably every Dublin fan would tell you the same.
Yeah,
as well.
It's the blinker.
So when you put them all together, it doesn't look good, and it puts pressure on the referee going into the game.
Yeah. I think Philly McMahon can't believe his luck with all this talk.
That's the thing. Where were they when all this was happening last
week? Rubbing his hands together. Like, he could basically do what he wants to Aidan O'Shea because everyone's going to be watching Keegan and Connolly.
Yeah, do you know what? I don't think either team deserved an All-Ireland out of the last day anyway. I don't think either team were playing enough football. Looking at the last day, there was very little football played, I thought. I thought it was poor stuff now.
Yeah.
A lot of running and racing and hand-passing and soloing and going nowhere and coming back to do the same thing again. Like, so whatever happens the next day, they'll have to cut loose. Connolly and Keegan, Dublin and Mayo will have to come out and play because, for me, you know, they were almost afraid of it the last day.
It seemed a bit that way. Maybe the conditions. We'll get into a bit of analysis. The last thing I want to talk about briefly before we move into some analysis is Jim McGuinness. Now, this is last Tuesday week's piece, but I thought it was one of the all-time classics. He thinks Mayo should do something different the next day. Now, Mayo are so close to Dublin. Why rip up that script and, you know, do something so different and start from scratch all over again? But his idea was that Mayo should put three monsters on the edge of the square: Aidan O'Shea, Barry Moran and Tom Parsons, and bombard the square for a while and have the rest of the Mayo side defending as a unit of 12. So he wants three midfielders in the full forward line. He wants Killian O'Connor, Andy Moran and, like, you know, proper natural forwards back as a 12 defending, and he wants to bombard the three fellas. Parsons, their best midfielder, Barry Moran, another big midfielder, and he wants... Like, is Jim McGuinness on the wind-up here, or what's going on?
That's what I was saying.
One of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
You nearly think he doesn't want Mayo to win just so he can be the man who has beaten Dublin and nobody else can. I mean, that's Tom Parsons was amazing last day. He was probably their best player. Like, I don't understand this logic as well of this three big men inside. Like, how many times are we going to keep talking about it? Like, Dublin have had six games now, and all he's been hearing before every single game is put on a high ball. No, he wants to change it with three men inside. Like, I think if you try that against Dublin with 12 men back, like, you're on a hide into nothing, and you'd soon be changing everything after 20 minutes because they'd be well ahead of you.
Yeah. Paul, you've played in a lot of All-Irelands. Like, I mean, you've 3 weeks to prepare. You've maybe four sometimes. Like, start trying something like this. It's just madness in that 3 weeks. You're not trying to fine-tune what you're good at rather than actually saying, right, let's forget about what we've done, not just this year, for the last 3 or 4 years, and let's just try something different.
Yeah, well, I'd agree with him from the point of view that you do need to try something different. It's about trying the right thing then and getting it right, you know what I mean? So Mayo, to be fair, I think Mayo have been good this year in terms of bringing something new to the table each game from, we'll say, getting to the quarterfinal. The quarterfinal, and they have been good at implementing a new tactic and a new strategy on a certain day given the opposition. So I'd actually think the next day they should try something. And try something new. Maybe
three midfielders in there.
Maybe not that. You know what I mean? Maybe not that. But you know, you could start Aidan O'Shea in there, which, you know, wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility. But I do think on an All Ireland final day, pulling the rug from under an opponent is part of it. It's part of winning.
Yeah. No, so. I agree. I the principle of trying something different, I 100% agree with. What I can't understand is having Killian O'Connor and Andy Moran and Jason Doherty and these fellas back defending as 12 while you've got three natural midfielders in your full forward line. Like, I mean, there's trying something different and then there's just going crazy altogether.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, Jim Gavin, I'm sure now, and Stephen Ratchford will have their own ideas. I don't think they're too worried about what Jim McGuinness now or myself or whoever else is saying.
They read everything. Oh, no, stupid. They're always reading the columns. I don't think Stephen Ratchford would pay too much attention to that, because if he did, I'd say Mayo are definitely barking up the wrong tree.
Hope he doesn't, then.
All right, up next, we'll do some analysis.
I've had fellas follow me. And not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. And it does happen. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot. And the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible and unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, backing club and county.
All right, a lot of people are saying since the drawn match is that Mayo will never get a better chance to beat Dublin. They've lost their opportunity. Favourites always win the replays. It's not always as simple as that. Like, I mean, I've lost the Leinster final after being favourites drawing the first day, came out the next day thinking, all right, it's going to happen now. You know, favourites win the replays. We're a better team. We've got the shock we wanted. And Westmead actually grew in stature after drawing with us, realised these lads aren't that great, and actually came out and sewed it into us even more the second day. So, like, it's very difficult to know psychologically where both teams are at.
I think Mayo proved the last day that they weren't underdogs, really. Like, they might be slight, maybe not favourites, but they're certainly not underdogs, and they're not, like, it's not beyond the realms of possibility they can win this. Like, so I don't buy into this philosophy that they've missed the boat, or like we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. They've done everything they could have done. Like, they played perfectly. They essentially won by 6 points. They handed Dublin 2 goals. So this idea that they've thrown the game away, like, it's nonsense. Like, so I think they've done everything they could have done. They got really, really unlucky, and you're right, they shouldn't change anything. And I think if anything, all that game will prove is that they're actually as good as Dublin, and they're certainly not underdogs going into the next game.
Yeah, I think they'll have gained confidence from it, Paul. I don't think they will actually go in. The most important thing is that they don't congratulate themselves now and say, look, we played well, everyone's saying we did so well. They actually have to go to another level again, because that level won't be good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really comes down to mental toughness now and how they have been since the replay and how they have kind of thought about the replay and that kind of thing, because to me they're in a great position. I think Dublin have to improve by 50 or 60% to win it. I think Mayo probably have to improve by maybe 10 or 20% to win it. In that, I think their approach was perfect. I think they were aggressive. They're physically able to compete. They just have to improve a little bit more from a footballing point of view. I think their setup is good. I think Dublin are have a little bit more surgery to do on the team, and they have a little bit more thinking to do in terms of getting their performance right the next day.
Yeah. So, but you see, that's Dublin will be getting slaughtered in the dressing room, as in you were terrible. Right, so they have that natural, we need to improve it. Lads. Where Mayo are in kind of a situation where they're not being lynched by the management. You know, they're kind of being told, look, you were good, let's do a little bit better. So, you know, it's easier probably for the Dublin Dubs naturally to get that bit of improvement.
Yeah, Dublin are definitely more dangerous now coming into this game. They'll be a very dangerous animal on the day. There'll be a big backlash from them, and they have the personnel who will be able to really carry out a backlash, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like they have a lot of personality and pride and that kind of thing. So, you know, I think it comes down to basically how well Mayo can cope with that and what they can bring themselves to match that and to go better than that.
Yeah, team, like there is room for improvement in both teams. Like Mayo weren't outstanding. Like a lot of people are saying their defence was brilliant, and it was to a certain degree. But the 2-1 goals were good goal chances on a dry day. Dublin probably would have scored. Dean Rock wouldn't let that drop. You know, Bernard Brogan might take a sidestep. And Clark saved two goal chances as well.
So although, I would never take away from a keeper making a save. I mean, he's still part of Mayo's team. That's what he's there for.
But they got in, though, you know.
And this defending is part of a final as well, I think. I mean, this is going to happen. Like, and that's part of winning these big matches. So I don't.
But their goal chance, what I would say on that is that their goal chances.
I think Dean Rock one definitely should have been a goal. Like,
that would have, on a dry day, that was a definite goal.
That was just a balls up from him. Like anybody else, or a dry day, it was going to go on anyway. But I don't think chances necessarily, like the ones that Fenton missed, I don't think they should amount to scores. Like, it's just chances, and Mayo dealt with it. It might have been the last line of defence that dealt with it, but they still dealt with it, and I think you need to do that. They won matches, they'll need to do it again on Saturday. So I wouldn't sort of take away from the fact that Dublin got in, because they are going to get in, but the fact that they kept them scoreless essentially for half an hour, they did do well defensively.
Yeah, like, do you think Dublin were going for goals too much in that first half, because Fenton got in so easily, that they might be saying, here, there's goals here, and actually give up, you know, kicking scores, which is what they're good at?
Well, Dublin obviously, if you look at Dublin Mayo over the years, Dublin do get goals against Mayo, and they get them from midfield. If you go back to 13, Bernard Brogan's goal came from Dennis Bastic and McCauley running through the middle. You go back to last year's game, McManaman's goal in the drawn game came from Fenton running through the middle. Bernard Brogan's goal in the second half of that game came from a Fenton run through the middle. Fenton got in for two goal chances the last day. One was from McCauley. The Dublin midfield feel they can get a run on the Mayo midfield in terms of getting in on goal, that the Mayo boys won't track them, and they've had joy in that regard in the past, and they went for it the last day from the start. Fenton and McCauley going together thinking, we're not going to get tracked here, we're not going to get picked up. Fenton got in twice and they got a goal out of one, and Clark made a good save from the other. So like, for me, if I'm Mayo coming into this replay, like, I'd be going really big on that.
Yeah,
I'd be talking to my half forwards to say everyone is looking out for runners from midfield, especially early on, but at all stages of the game, but particularly early on from the throw-in, the two of them are going to go together. Everybody's looking for it. Everybody's looking for these runs because they've had such joy. No doubt they'll try it again. They'll try it again on Saturday.
Yeah, it was surprising Mayo didn't actually man-mark Fenton. Like, I was at the game and I was trying to say who's actually marking Fenton. And I'd look down 1 minute and Vaughan's on him. I'd look down another minute and Parsons is on him. And I'd look down another minute and Shamie O'Shea's on him. And nobody seemed to be detailed to actually mark this marauding midfielder who burst forward. And it seemed to be like, you're out around there, pick up who's free. Now, maybe I've got it wrong, but like, from what I could see looking down there and actually trying to figure out, because I love to figure out who's on who.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to figure out who's on who in that game.
And when I saw Parsons was named in the team, I thought, brilliant, that's exactly what he's there for.
Yeah.
He's going to keep an eye on these two boys now. But it's probably tough. I mean, Parsons and Vaughan give so much. It's funny, like they played so well, but they sort of neglected. They all played well. They had that agreement that we're talking about. But they give so much on the ball, and maybe it's tough to sort of... I always say that the toughest thing to watch for in a Gaelic match is an off the ball runner. Like it's tough. You can't really legislate for it. Like especially when you're sort of given so much on the ball and you're trying to sort of be aware of positioning and you're talking to players and setting the whole team up, and then all of a sudden Fenton and McCauley are away together. Yeah. I mean, you might go with one of them, but all it takes is one sort of switch off and it's gone within a second. So it's all well and good saying that, but will Rochford really say, go you out now and man mark these guys? Because it might take away from them going.
Might take away, and of course Donal Vaughan played so well, scored 2 points. So if you say to Donal Vaughan, go mark Fenton, you're taking away from that attacking thing as well. It's almost like the midfielders are told, play your own game, we need you in an attacking sense, you know, especially with Mayo when they're playing the man markers, they need the midfielders to, you know, create extra bodies up front.
It's a team job, and that's a thing that has to be part of a team, looking for runners. It doesn't come down to okay, you might get detailed a man, but I think it's actually more a responsibility for a half forward and a wing forward to be looking out for these things and to say, because you can see everything. If you're a half forward, you can see the midfield play.
Yeah.
And you can see something developing in a guy who's looking to go. You have to be able to read those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to be looking for them and cutting them off before he even gets going.
Yeah.
So like I'd be looking at Dermot O'Connor and McLaughlin if he's not too deep. Aidan O'Shea to be because the best way to deal with those is actually to come from behind the guy. Read it and come from the side of him or come from behind him and cut it off like that, because you'll have a head of steam up, you have a couple of yards on him, but you have to be reading it and looking for it.
Yeah, the half forwards now on Mayo seem to be dropping back strategically into areas rather than doing what you're saying, which you would have done when you were playing, as in, right, anybody that kind of switches off for a second, I'm the safety net, I'll track them and do the selfless run.
It's a team thing, and it has to be part of a team shape. And if you know, it's a different thing if you're deep as a half forward and you're kind of in a half back position. It's a much more difficult thing than to track a runner, because he's got the head of steam on you.
Yeah. And tracking runners is horrible.
He knows. Yeah, I like doing it now, to be honest.
Yeah. Loved it.
But he's a head of steam on you if you're kind of in front of him.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're behind him, you're able to see it almost before he'll see it. And you've got more of a run on him then, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You can nearly see from the back of his head, like when you see that sort of pattern shifting over to one side. You can really see this guy sort of thinking, right, this is opening up for me, you know, and that's where the half forward comes into it.
If you're getting it on the, if you're on the other side of midfield, he already has it.
Yeah.
By the time you get to him, you're coming against him. Whereas if you're behind him,
it's about having a football brain on the field too. Like, I mean, some players wouldn't even see that danger arising. You know, they're not aware.
Don't want
to
see it. Maybe
they're not aware to it. Yeah, maybe that there's so many men back, as someone else will pick them up. Whereas, like, I mean, when you were playing, like towards the end of your career, there was defensive systems into the mix, but. When the game's like that, it's like it's easy to pass the book in that scenario. We've enough lads back. You know what I mean? He'll run into a body there fairly soon.
It depends on what your job is.
Yeah.
If it's part of your job, you have to do it. And if it's part of your job and you're not doing it, then questions will be asked and most likely you'll be taken off or you'll be...
Yeah.
You know, so it all comes down to what's happening within the team structure, what's happening on the training ground, what the manager's asking of you and how you prepare for games and knowing what your job is.
Do we see any changes on the Mayo team, lads? Or even personnel changes, I think no. Positional changes, maybe.
It's a good question, Willie.
It is a preview show.
I wasn't ready for this. Barry Moran, maybe. Like, but no, I don't think so. Like,
I think personnel they won't. I think it's a mistake to play Aidan O'Shea in the full forward line. I think you're getting no change out of him in there. And I think Mayo were getting joy when they were running at Dublin. Like, I mean, Donal Vaughan got it through the middle. Durkin got a score through the middle. You know, Andy Moran's goal chance came from a run through the middle.
And it kicks several points from the number six position. Like, I think Dublin have to do away. I think Dublin have to come out and play orthodox. I think the sweeper system is going to beat them. I think their own system is going to beat them.
That's a very good point. That a lot of those scores were scored from around the D. And that's where Keane O'Sullivan needs to be. So teams need to take advantage of that. Don't have Aidan O'Shea in where he's being double marked. Bring him out. And let Keane O'Sullivan cover two that are in there and use Aidan O'Shea as the man breaking into that centre half forward position.
You know, I think part of sport, any sport, you know what I mean, you have a system and you have a belief and you have a way of playing, but you have to know that will be eventually what will beat you as well at the end of the day. Like, you know, you look at Donegal, like Donegal in 14, really their system, Kerry just copped the system and killed them on that.
Yeah.
Dublin are on the verge of the same thing. If they don't start kicking the ball out to the middle of the field to McCauley, Fenton, Flynn and Connolly, playing a bit more orthodox, letting Keane O'Sullivan play more, because you need more out of Keane O'Sullivan. If you need more out of your centre back in an All Ireland final, regardless of who he is, you need your centre back playing a bit more football than sweeping. And yeah. Keane O'Sullivan is a bit better than being a sweeper, I think. And
he's a better all rounder, yeah.
If they don't change that up, I think Mayo will definitely beat them. Even if they do change it up, I think Mayo still have a great chance of winning it.
Yeah, and isn't it mad though, when Dublin go to midfield or when Mayo go to midfield, Fenton's winning them, and it's not Fenton's winning them, they're winning the breaking ball. Why is Cookston going
that
all the time? He's actually so predictable now. Isn't he?
Listen, I would crack up on that Dublin team at the moment, to be honest with you. Or I would have cracked up on that game the last day anyway, because as a half forward who wants primary ball, like, you know, it wasn't there. People are talking about Paul Flynn then, and like, I mean, that game to my eye anyway doesn't suit Paul Flynn, because there's no breaking ball to attack. The ball is slow coming up the field. The half forwards are getting sucked down the field. Everyone is soloing it. I think Dublin need to play a bit more football now the next day and put bank on Connolly and Fenton and McCauley and Flynn and these guys over in the middle and winning enough ball to win them the game.
Is there a bit of a confidence issue going through Dublin, which is strange considering they've won how many games in a row? But I mean, Cluxton, for example, he's playing safe. Like, any time he sees a free man, he'll use it, and obviously that's probably an instruction as well. But when they're one ball outfield, like, why is he not just giving it to them? Keane O'Sullivan, I saw stats last night, and I know Mayo have played two more games than them, but like, Kevin McLaughlin has had, I think, 78% more possessions than Keane O'Sullivan, and he's intercepted the ball more times, and he's had five turnovers to Keane O'Sullivan's one turn. You know, so something like that. I know Kevin McLaughlin is not always a sweeper as well, but he's becoming a lot more effective. Like, Keane O'Sullivan, like, we're just actually starting to ask questions about him when he was the stigma at the heart of that Dublin defence. And then you go up, like, Paul Flynn is getting lost in the middle. I don't know what he's doing anymore. Like, he's not even...
Yeah, Dublin have clearly changed the way they play. They're not kicking it as much. Kieran Kilkenny's slowing it down.
Kilkenny's an horrible
one. Flynn's natural game. Flynn is struggling to figure out, how do I change my game to actually get into the game now? You know, what's worked for him for 4 years, four All-Stars in 5 years, doesn't work anymore for whatever reason. So he's struggling to adapt and, you know, find a new role for himself, isn't he?
And I would say it's not even now that he's sort of getting lost. He's actually just playing poorly. Like, he's not, because he's not doing anything. Like, and this is like, his standards were so high, but it's not even comparing his standards anymore. It's just like, what is this man doing? Like, and could he benefit more with having Mannion on from the start? You know, having Andrews. I think Andrews will definitely come in anyway for McMenamin, probably. God love McMenamin, but that's what they'll do.
But the thing about Flynn is that his bread and butter were those kickouts out to the wing.
Yeah.
Whereas if he wasn't in the game, he knew that he was getting five or six of them during the game. Cluxton's so brilliant at them that this is guaranteed possession, and it's up to me then to do what I want to do. Now he's no guaranteed possession, you know, so he's like going through phases of a game for 10, 15 minutes without touching it, and I think he's struggling to cope with that.
Well, I mean, in that instance, you need to be able to play with your back to the goal and take a ball, a sharp ball, and spin a guy, and be able to turn guys left and turn guys right and roll them and get going inside is the way to change your game up and adapt to that kind of a sharp game. You need to be able to play with your back to goal very well.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're under kickouts, you're coming on, you're facing the goal probably a little bit more than you are when it's going short. You're back to the goal the whole time. So then you have to become really good with your back to the goal and be able to turn and twist and beat guys and move it along like that. So that'd probably be the challenge for him now at this stage.
Yeah.
But then I think you'll see a big game from him the next day. Like, I wouldn't like to be listening to the kind of talk I've been listening to now if I'm Paul Flynn or Bernard Brogan, by the way, who've been two of the best players.
But the only thing is now, they've been on, and I'll agree with you, because I made the case for the two of them. Flynn was excellent against Kerry in the All-Ireland last year. Bernard Brogan always does it on the big day. But Flynn and Brogan, and I know the two of them well, they haven't played well for three games now. It's not just, you know, a bad game. They're not having a good season. So can you turn a slump into a really good game at this stage now? And I do accept, by the way, that Bernard's not getting anywhere near the service that he used to get, for the reasons that Kilkenny's slowing it down. Connolly's getting marked out of it. So who are the actual good kick passers to give Bernard a bit of service? Like, who are they? McManaman runs it, head down.
Yeah.
Fenton runs it. Michael Darren McCauley runs it. James McCarthy runs it. John Small might look up. Keane O'Sullivan's too far back. Who are the providers now?
Connolly.
Yeah, but Connolly's doing a sumo wrestling match with Keegan on the ground.
Yeah, I
probably missing Allen a bit, actually.
Hugely. And, like, I mean, I suppose he missed him last year because he wasn't getting enough game time. The one thing Allen always did, and it's a huge benefit, And when I used to play centre forward with Portage, any time I got the ball, the lads in the full forward line knew I'm turning and giving it. 100%. There's no messing around. And there's a huge value to have somebody whose game, like workers grand, but someone who gets it and turns and is immediately looking up, then make your run.
Yeah.
Bernard's, I'd say, is disheartened in there now.
I would definitely wouldn't drop Bernard, because I think that's a systematic problem. Like, that's, give him the ball, like, he's Bernard Brogan, he's moving, you can see it, like, the analysis of last year's final, they showed it behind the goals for just, like, 10-second clip, and it was frightening, just this hand going up left, right, like, he was going everywhere, and he didn't even get the ball, I don't think, but it just shows you the movement right of him, so he is showing for the ball, but, and I would always say that if someone like Bernard Brogan's not getting the ball, that is not his fault, because you know he'd want it if you give it to him, so I would always look at the rest of the team then, but then I'm just... The Flynn one, like, you know, and as great as a player as he's been, and as much as, you know, Paul might want to defend him here, but I just don't know what he's doing. And, like, the Cluxton, I don't know if he's not looking for the ball anymore off Cluxton. And I don't know if Cluxton's just not looking for him, maybe.
I think the instruction is for Cluxton, when the cornerback is there free, give it to him.
Yeah.
Keep possession, don't risk anything. It's a conservative, then, it's a conservative style.
And then maybe Flynn does need to play if he's back to goal, but then can he? So if he's not getting the ball off Cluxton, and if he can't maybe get the ball if he's back to goal as well as the others, is he suited to the current system?
Yeah, he has experience playing full forward with his club. Like, Flynn can adapt his game to play with his back to goal. But it's whether, you know, whether he's instructed to do that or what the instructions are to him, it's difficult. So are you predicting no changes on the Dublin team, Paul?
Listen, I'm not predicting anything. But
what would you do rather than...
I'd be leaving those two boys there. Anyway.
Right, yeah. And would McManaman get the chop then? Because Andrews played really well when he came on. Like, I think Andrews nearly needs to start.
He scored 5 last year against Mayo, didn't he? From
he loves playing Mayo.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'd leave it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Really?
I would, yeah. Yeah. But I would change the system.
Right. To
kicking the ball out, letting Keane O'Sullivan play a bit more orthodox.
Yeah.
I don't know why they've stopped that. That's why I'm wondering, is it a confidence issue?
I don't. I'll tell you what my theory on this is that Dublin played Westmeath in the Leinster final. They were terrible in the first half, right? They made the change then and put Kieran Kilkenny in the half back line, and they blew Westmeath away. Kieran Kilkenny adapted his game and started hand passing it laterally, right? So that was okay against Westmeath. Did the same thing against Donegal then. Mm. He started half back. Play a slow build up, lads. The kicking game isn't really on against the Donegals of this world because they've too many men back. Then they come on against Kerry and Mayo, and it worked against Kerry, but you turn around to Mayo and you actually have to play a really fast paced game. Yeah. And Dublin are still playing the kind of game that works against Donegal and Westmead, where they're playing it conservatively, they're playing it through the hand, they're not kicking it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they've become obsessed with it, playing against a Donegal style team when Mayo aren't that team.
And because what they had was Mayo men just hanging off them the whole way around the pitch and just hammering them every time they tried to run at their passes sideways.
Yeah, yeah. And Kilkenny's a huge thing of that. Look, Kilkenny be back in the half forward line. Kilkenny play orthodox half forward. Jim Gavin say, get back to the way you can play. He's got great vision. Give in ball. Dear McConnelly the same. And like Paul says, play it a bit more orthodox and you could see a completely different Dublin team.
Well, that's the beauty of Dublin, that you could play the same team and just play a lot better.
If you play longer, you can keep your half forward line higher and that gets your full forward line moving, and I think you have a better chance. I think that gives Dublin a better chance of winning.
Yeah, they've actually no one holding the half forward line. There's a full forward line, which is fair enough, but then they're gone conservative back, and then there's too much of a gap, and they're forcing
Mayo,
the odd.
Mayo didn't have a half
Mayo
forward
doing
line
the same either. Thing, yeah. Shouldn't they have some presence on the half forward line? Play one and two rather than three and a huge gap, because like, full forward lines hate a big gap like that, because all their men have to do is stand one step in front of them, and they're in trouble.
Yeah, I think you should always have a man on the 45. Like, and it doesn't matter if the centre back's away, he should be sitting on the 45 and playing as a centre forward and not going back. So he's always an outlet. As soon as you won the ball, bang, straight to him, and then your attack is started from there.
Yeah, I think there's not. What do you think of this new conservative style from Dublin? Why do you think they're doing it?
I don't like it. I hate watching it. I hate soloing anyway. No, the soloing, people talk about the hand pass. I don't mind the hand pass because there's a bit of skill in a hand pass and timing a hand pass to a fella on the run, or timing a lofting a ball over a fella's head to a guy for a goal chance. That's skill, and that takes a bit of vision and it takes a bit of ability. Soloing does my head in, I must say. I hate looking at fella soloing the ball, especially backs. 2 and 3 solos every time they get the ball, it kills a team.
Yeah.
And I actually think there shouldn't be any solo in the game, actually, or else maybe one solo, a hop and a solo, or or two hops and one solo, but like Montesolo and it's crazy.
Yeah, but that's one of the things played wing back a lot that any good coach will tell you is run forward without the ball, ghost into positions, give it and go. If you go with the ball, there's a bet, you know, you're going to get dispossessed, so you're in trouble, you're bringing everyone with you. And this is the one thing about Mayo, is that they played no full-time sweeper, right? So when they were attacking Dublin, when Dublin turned it over, there was a chance, if they moved it fast, to get up the other end of the field without loads of lads behind. But because they were so slow with the build-up, Mayo just moved back along with the ball, and suddenly you see a snapshot with Mayo with 13 lads in there, and it's Dublin's own fault. They had an opportunity to break fast and they were turning it down.
I mean, you know yourself, every time you take a solo, the whole pitch changes. Like, by the time you look back up, like, everything's changed. There's an odd man in position, like, just the shape of something has differed, and that's just the space of one solo. And then when you start sauntering up with two and three, everything changes and then you've lost your chance. And that's what Dublin were so good at over the last couple of years. It was, we need to go faster here, because it was always preparing for Donegal all the time. They're going to get back. So we need to get on ahead of them. And that's what sort of set Jim Gavin apart as well. So he needs to sort of, over the last 2 weeks, he needs to have been sort of hammering at home again. This is how we're going to win this match.
Yeah, so we're going with no changes for Mayo. We're going with no changes. I think there's going to be one change.
I think Paddy Andrews will play.
And it's up for debate who's going to go.
I think there will be changes.
Yeah, he wouldn't change.
I would look more at the system and maybe give the boys another go and go with the more Artox game and play to the strengths of maybe the Flynns and the Connollys and the Fentons and the McCauleys and play faster and play longer.
Yeah.
Would be my approach, but. Who am I now to be telling? I'm no one to be telling Jim Gavin how to be going about
Jim Gavin listens to this podcast. That's why he won't talk to me. It's difficult to know. What do you think, Gouda, actually have you here, is Dublin, after the drawn game, had dinner and went home. The night of a drawn All-Ireland final. Like, imagine going home to your own house. The anti-climax. You're sitting on the couch watching television after the euphoria and the highs of a few hours earlier. I don't know. I think, especially with 2 weeks now, people think I advocate drinking all the time. But like, I mean, Jesus, dinner together and five or six pints and go home or something. Like, how did they even sleep, Paul? Have you ever drawn a high profile game? Have you ever gone home and not drink after a high profile game?
Yeah,
it's a horrible experience.
Yeah, it's the way of it. I mean, you're talking 12, 13 days, like, you know, you take 2 days out of it for recovery.
Yeah.
The Tuesday night session, you wouldn't have done a whole lot. So you really might have only a week. You might have only a week to work there.
Yeah.
So I to be honest, I think that was probably a good move.
Do you think you're overthinking things? You might overthink things then, like, back home, and get stressed out and beat yourself up, whereas...
It's not the drink. Like, it's maybe just being together, like, and talking through the game.
A couple of drinks would be no harm, but where do you have them? Where do you have them on the night of the game? Where do you go when you're not? You have the whole of Dublin wondering what happened and how were you so bad.
Well, that's true. You won't be going to coppers.
It would take a lot more out of you than the few pints would, believe me. So
yeah,
it's not so much the drink either, but where you go to have them and how you try to process the game and that kind of thing is not easy when you're out in public. Like,
yeah, Mayo had their banquet. Dublin ate before the banquet started and got the hell out of there. Mayo had their banquet. Now the players were separated away from, you know, the public or the fans that paid and stuck together. But even to stay at the banquet until 10 or 11 together with your teammates and talk things out and have a bit of closure on things, I think that's a better option than being sent home to your, you know, like, imagine.
They had probably had much choice either, considering they're from Mayo and they had a hotel booked and everything like that, so the Dubs probably,
well, that's true,
could stroll home, you know what I mean? So
yeah, so maybe it's just by chance that happened. All right, next up, we'll have some predictions.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home by, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bound in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
Well, a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Okay, lads, the betting for this one is that the odds have changed, obviously, since the last day. Mayo, the last time, were 10-3, which over 3-1. Mayo now are 9-4, just over 2-1. So their odds have obviously come in. I see it as a 50-50 game myself. Dublin are 8-15 and a draw again is 9-1. Wouldn't be the craziest bet in the world.
9-1.
The handicap has come in. Dublin minus 2 is evens. Mayo plus 2 is 11-10. Who are we going for here?
I think that draw is a great bet.
Hey, where did they again? Pull, where did they pull 9-1 out of?
Well, I don't know.
I can't see. I can't, like, even before the drawing game, I thought Dublin, because I felt Mayo probably weren't far enough along the way to actually compete with them. But they did. They were really good. So, do you know what? If Dublin don't change the system, I think they'll be beaten. But I think they will address. They will address the system. I think Mayo will improve further. So, do you know what? I think I might hit the bookies and take that draw.
Right.
I'm on that as well. I mean, like, that's suggesting that.
Chances of two draws, though, lads. Come on, lightning doesn't strike twice.
You see, but you can't look at, like, the last game, though. You're looking at this one, though. It's a whole new sort of set of stats and rules. Like, it's back to zero, and they're saying there now that, you know, with nine games, they'll only draw once, these two teams. That's what 9-1 suggesting. Like.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand how odds work.
Yeah, so, like, if they have nine games.
Tutorial.
So, like, you have to sort of take it, you know, based on the fact that those.
But they've already drawn once last week, so the probabilities change.
No, not anymore, because we're back. We're back on this one now. Like, you forget about last week.
Okay, we won't get bogged down in this. What about, you know, Dublin minus 2, Mayo plus 2? It doesn't really make a whole lot of difference. I think, I personally, you know, the element of surprise, for example, is gone from Mayo. They would have had huge belief the last day going in to the game that we can win this. Dublin would have thought, you know, we're in our comfort zone. We're the best Dublin team ever. We've just beaten Kerry when they scored, you know, two goals. They went 7 points up. We're unbeatable. That's gone now. So that element of surprise is gone. The weather forecast is good as well, lads. And I don't care what anybody says. If you're a kicking team in Croke Park when that ground is so skiddy and, like, you can't, when you're a kicking team, you're giving in to Bernard Brogan, it has to go straight to his chest, the bounce won't work or else it's just skidding away from him.
They dropped a lot last year in the
against Kerry last year. Dublin were poor, it's just Kerry were worse. This year Dublin played very poorly against Mayo because the skiddy ball, it doesn't seem to suit them. And I don't know, I think a dry day probably will suit Dublin if they change, kick a little bit more, that kick will stick. Then again, Aidan O'Shea let an awful lot drop the last time. The kicks into him weren't sticking either. So, like, I mean, it probably works for both teams. Although I do think a good day suits Dublin more than Mayo.
So are you saying Dublin are going to win?
Well, who's everybody gone for? I don't think anybody's nailed their colours to the mast than anybody here.
I'm still looking at this 9-1.
you've both gone for draws.
I wouldn't be surprised to see a draw, no. I think, look, I think Mayo have all the momentum. They have huge momentum. There's a real force behind them.
How much does that count?
Counts for a lot. I think, to be honest, I think Dublin have more to do to win this than Mayo do. And if they don't address these fundamentals in their game, I think Mayo will win.
Right, okay. Yeah. I went for Mayo the last time and I want to stick with them. Just, you know, I love an underdog and I'd rather tip Mayo and be wrong than just go for the obvious one. So I'll go for Mayo. And, like, for the reasons that I've been burned so badly by Westmeath and that experience is that if Dublin don't get their heads right and if Dublin think that automatically, right, this is will never be as bad the next day. Look, everybody underperformed. Everybody's going to perform. Unless they make it work and change. Like, I mean, the same kind of nonchalant way of going into an All-Ireland is not going to work. So if Dublin can, you know, fix that, they'll be very hard to beat as they usually are. But there's a lot of or maybe everyone's being too reactionary. Dublin have one bad game and suddenly everything's wrong with them, whereas 2 weeks before they were the greatest ever.
I think part of why I backed Mayo 2 weeks ago was that Dublin didn't look unbeatable. Like, that's, you know, it's not that they weren't winning, but they weren't setting the world alight. What you're saying about the Laois Westmeath thing, like, I've had four experiences with Derry winning or drawing with Tyrone. Four times and each time they got absolutely hammered the next day.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think Mayo are underdogs like Derry would have been. I think Mayo have proven that they're here at this level and I think they'll win as well. But I'm going to back it. Like, I'm going to predict Mayo to win, but I'm going to go to the bookies because that doesn't make sense. 9-1. So I'm going to back a draw on the bookies.
Okay, so we're all going for Mayo.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not saying the Dublin are now a bad team.
Yeah.
They just have a little bit of surgery to carry out, like, and if they don't do that, I think it gives Mayo a gives Mayo the win. Mayo, they were so good last year. I was really impressed with their approach. Really impressed with how aggressive they were. Their attitudes were spot on. They didn't probably, but neither team executed really well, to be honest, in the conditions. So
no,
the conditions will play a part probably. In terms
if it
of
wasn't so exciting a game, it would have been a shite game, wouldn't it? Really, because like standards wise, it was terrible at times.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the game.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. From an excitement point of view, and from a like Mayo or Gond or back the OGs, it was edge of the seat stuff. Yeah. But if you broke it down, it was poor, very poor standard game.
Poor standard, but exciting. Like in, have we got that again next week? Like it was funny. There was only three scores after 20 minutes or something, but it was like, geez, this is the best game of the season.
Yeah.
Quality was poor, but the excitement was high.
Yeah, okay, right, we're all going for Mayo. We'll be back on Monday. Hopefully I'll get to the winning team's hotel on Saturday morning, or on Sunday morning, and get some reaction from there. If it's Mayo, I'll probably get more reaction than I might get if Dublin win it. Won't get Jim Gavin anyway. But anyways, we'll be back Monday with another show for you. So that's all we have time for this week. Thanks to everybody for putting the show together. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @sportsshow_GEA and subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll see you all on Monday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.